Hello, this is Angela Kenrick from Team 2, here in Waltham House for part 2 of our exclusive interview with founder Mr. John Waltham. John will be 200 in June this year, so to mark the occasion, he's kindly agreed to talk to us about his remarkable life. Hello, John.
Oh, hello again, Angela. And listeners.
And the first part concluded with the establishment of regular Thursday afternoon meetings for the town's blind people at the Mechanics Institute in 1866. Perhaps you could explain how things moved on from there.
Well, yes, things moved rather quickly. We received a lot of support. A group of ladies started making clothes for the needy and volunteer teachers came forward. On the anniversary of the first tea party for the blind, we held another at the Sunday school and invited local dignitaries, the mayor, aldermen, clergy, and the governor of the workhouse, to help fundraise and discuss the future.
You also expanded the invitation to deaf and people without speech.
Yes, around 20 came, and 50 blind people of all ages and abilities. A free tea was provided and entertainment, and Louisa impressed everyone with her piano playing skills. We wanted to establish a school and to help as many as possible to be able to earn their own livelihood. Many had to rely on poor relief or the workhouse.
So you set up a charity, an institution?
Yes. A committee was formed, with Mr. James Sidebottom becoming the chairman. James was a generous benefactor to the town. Mary also visited Liverpool Asylum and so on to see how similar institutions were managed. We were then able to acquire premises for a school, workshop and sale room.
And where were these first premises?
Wellington Road South, next to the Nelson Inn. It was two cottages that took a couple of months to fit out. We opened on Monday the 25th of March 1867 with a successful event. A procession left the Mechanics Institute with deaf people guiding blind people up to the new premises, in the rain, which didn't dampen any spirits. We stopped outside, sung a hymn, and then gathered in the schoolroom upstairs for speeches. Some of us then went downstairs to open the bazaar. We could hear the folks upstairs singing Home Sweet Home. It was very moving.
And what opportunities did you provide?
Education, training and work. We employed teachers who taught writing, arithmetic and reading by the use of raised alphabet letters. Provided the chance to learn a trade, basket, rug, cooking, which they were paid a wage for and also received a share of the sale proceeds. We hope to provide a sense of independence and opportunity.
Now, moving slightly away from that now, in 1867, you were elected onto the Board of Guardians. Now, what did that involve? Sounds like some kind of security role.
No, not at all. A guardian of the poor. We distributed the poor rate and oversaw the running of the workhouse. I was elected for Heaton Norris with another chap, and all the guardians met every Monday morning in the workhouse to deal with everything from queries about relief requests to extensions to the house itself.
Ah, I see.
Although, joking aside, security was a bit of a problem when I started. We had no facilities to keep seriously mentally ill patients apart from others in the hospital ward. A chap I had some brief dealings with, he was blind in his right eye, Alfred Rushton, was an inmate of the workhouse and he had some kind of a breakdown. He escaped and targeted my mills, smashed the windows. Oh, thank the Lord our home was in Heaton Norris by then. I shudder to think what he would have done if my family had still lived just over the road.
Gosh, and did the police catch him?
Yes, eventually. He was sent to Prestwich Asylum for 6 months, which seemed to have a good effect on him. He settled down after that, married and worked in a mill. Mine, I hasten to add.
Well, what a dramatic start to your time as a guardian. Your next role, alderman, was less so.
Well, yes. I was elected the following year by fellow councillors. Lots of meetings and committees. I suppose it was a step up on the local dignitary ladder.
And well deserved by many accounts. Even your political opponents admitted you were a gifted orator. And I quote, the most effective speaker in the town council, with an unusual command of language and a style of delivery which ensured the attention of the most indifferent listener.
Oh, you embarrass me.
Well, you reached the top of that local dignitary ladder when you were elected Mayor of Stockport in November 1871.
Oh, that was a great honour. A most enjoyable experience.
But not everyone was happy with you having that authority. particularly in relation to your enforcement of the new Licensing Act.
Oh, you mean the publicans. They were never happy with any of the restrictions on their evil trade.
Evil trade?
Well, yes, selling alcohol, ruining those around them. They weren't the family-friendly restaurants of today, you know. They took away the education of people's children and the comforts of their homes. If you'd seen what I've seen, the crime, illness, any chance of hope drowned in the beer seller's barrel.
So you used your role as mayor to enforce legislation?
Oh, yes. The police inspector and I made it our business to inspect licensed premises on a Saturday night and bring anyone violating the law to court the following morning. It upset quite a few people, I can tell you.
Yes, I bet it did. One of your last duties as mayor in September 1872 was the laying of the foundation stone for the new Blind Institute.
Yes, it was. Although it was Louisa who actually performed the ceremony. All the family were there. It was a marvellous occasion. My brother George presented Louisa with a beautiful silver trowel as a keepsake. A keepsake, excuse me.
This was situated at the end of St. Peter's Gate, the marketplace end.
Yes, it was a large corner plot. The Wellington Road premises soon became too small, and a purpose-built institution was always the ideal solution.
Now, sadly, there are no pictures of you in your mayoral regalia, but the chain of office was replaced at the end of your term anyway.
It was. Well, the chain wasn't in keeping with the dignity of the office, so a public subscription paid for a respectable replacement, parts of which are still in use today. We needed something more, though, so I commissioned Eglinton's in Manchester to create a golden enamel badge.
It's a very beautiful badge. In the centre, a blue enamel shield with gold swords stands out, surrounded by detailed goldwork flowers, foliage, sword and a lion's head. The dates of 1260 for the market charter and 1836, which was the creation of the municipal borough, stretch across the top of the shield, and the whole thing is topped with a crown. Sadly, it's not in current use. It was replaced in 1932 by the town's new coat of arms, which isn't as attractive, in my opinion.
No, I agree. Well, the new one is very plain in comparison.
Now, your badge now rests quietly in a cabinet in the town hall, still in its original case.
It has an inscription on the back as well, just stating that I presented it to the next mayor and the date.
A wonderful, but sadly little known legacy to the town. Your better known legacy, the Blind Institute, had been completed by June 1873. A three-storied building with two large shops on the ground floor to sell the goods produced, and workrooms, schoolroom and a committee room. You had an opening event, of course.
Yes. Lord and Lady Vernon officially opened it. There was a bazaar to raise much-needed funds, and the ladies, Mary in particular, arranged the beautiful decorations. Evergreen plants swept around the beams and along the wall lines. A large collection of colourful flags was placed around the rooms, and most memorably, the visitors entered the building by walking beneath a floral arch erected by the Working Men's Floral and Horticultural Society.
Oh, that sounds perfect. A wonderful occasion. When your term as mayor came to an end, your next role was that of a JP. But there were some objections to this.
Yes, those wicked publicans and landlords. They sent a petition to the Lord High Chancellor. Apparently copies have been out in the town centre pubs for all to sign.
Now, the petition read that on account of the extreme views held by Mr. Wolfhew against the licensing trade in general, and especially with reference to the new Licensing Act, he is not a fit person to administer impartial justice to a large portion of the inhabitants who are brought before the magistrate.
That's rubbish. I'm a fair Christian man. They've either broken the law or not. My views have nothing to do with it.
Well, the Lord High Chancellor agreed with you, and it's a role you held for many years. Perhaps we can move on to your personal life now.
Yes, well, I'd had a few busy few years in the early 70s and my health started to deteriorate. Mary and I enjoyed a few short trips to health resorts, but my doctor recommended a complete break, not something I found easy to do. Mary and I went on a world tour.
A world tour in 1875? How long did that take?
We were away for a year. I missed the children terribly, but the experiences. We visited so many places. India, Ceylon, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, China and the United States.
Can you tell us some of the highs and lows?
Oh, well, the different cultures, climates and scenery. They were just something I'd only grasped from reading how many books before. Mary was delighted to see her brother again. He'd emigrated to Australia in 1852 and made a success of it too. We were warmly welcomed by the local dignitaries in many Australian towns and given informative tours of their local institutions and businesses. The lows, well, seasickness was a regular problem. Poor Mary, she suffered terribly. We had to evacuate our hotel in Singapore in the middle of the night as the one next door burst into flames and our room was burgled in Sydney. Oh, no comments about convicts, please.
I hate to remember indeed. I'm sorry, we haven't got time to hear more about this. Did your health improve overall?
Oh, thank you, yes. We returned in October 75 and, oh, I felt greatly restored. Some of the happiest times of my life.
Oh, that's good to hear. Thank you again for talking to us and we'll look forward to hearing you again next time.
Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.